Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today on the show, I am talking to the founder of Billy Tannery, Jack Millington. Billy Tannery is a new kind of leather company. After discovering that every goat skin left over from the British food industry was going to waste, they decided to do something. Tapping into local leather knowledge, they have turned an old farm building into the UK's first goat leather micro tannery. Their growing range of leather goods is designed and handmade in Britain to celebrate this exceptional material. And here to tell you all about Billy Tannery is the founder, Jack Millington. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce the founder of Billy Tannery, Jack Millington. How are we doing today, Jack?
I'm very well, thank you, Pete.
Great. Well, listen, thanks for taking time out. Please introduce yourself and how best do you describe the brand?
So my name is Jack Millington and I'm the founder of a business called Billy Tannery, which is what we describe as a new kind of leather company. So we're a leather goods company. Predominantly, we're a leather goods brand, but we have our own tannery, which is very unusual for a company like ours. And so the focus for us is all around leather and sort of trying to rethink what leather means in kind of modern times.
Interesting. Tell me how you started in this journey. Where did you begin?
Yeah, so I don't have a background in leather at all. I came at this from a slightly different angle in that I grew up on a farm. And I certainly wasn't the child that wanted to be a farmer. I was keen to get out off the farm and into the city and kind of followed my interests in sort of creative industries, I guess, and ended up working in marketing and advertising and in that kind of surrounding area for a good while, actually. And it sort of slowly dawned on me that actually I wanted to do something with a bit more substance, and perhaps there was something I could do that was linked back to the farm. And it was kind of in that process that I uncovered this so fascinating world of leather and found out that basically the leather industry in the UK had all but disappeared. And yeah, I with my marketing head on, I could see a story here and wondered whether I could do something that was linking the farm to leather and leather goods and create a brand out of it.
Interesting. Why would you think that the leather industry was on its knees at the time when you were thinking this in the UK? Well,
yeah, I mean, in the UK specifically, it's the same story as a lot of manufacturing, in that it just over the years with low cost competition from overseas, UK manufacturing businesses struggled to compete on price. And I think what not many of them were able to sort of change tack and start thinking about creating a sort of more premium product and telling that story about why it's so good to be done here in the UK. And I think that's what happened with the leather industry. It just couldn't compete with low cost leather that's made in countries where not only labor's cheaper, but environmental regulations are not quite closely followed. And I think that's sort of what started the decline of the leather industry. But it's one of those things that's happened over decades, and it's got to the point now where there are probably only not even 10 tanneries left in the UK from probably hundreds in the 80s.
Right. Jack, you're going to have to forgive me. Can you explain what a tannery is exactly and the process of what goes on? I mean, you know, for loads of people that don't know.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, tanning is one of those things that leather is everywhere. But you don't really stop to think about how it's made, and what most people don't. And I think what most people have in their heads when they think of a tannery is maybe what they might have seen in Morocco or somewhere like that, where you can picture these sort of big open pits with people walking around in shorts and it smelling horrible. And I think that is the sort of the brand image that leather has, that all leather's made in this sort of smelly, unclean environments. And really, leather's one of the oldest materials that man's ever made. So before sort of industrial techniques, it was done in quite a natural way. And that's kind of what we try and focus on. But in essence, leather is what you get when you transform the hide or skin of an animal into a material that can be used over a long period of time. So you've stopped it from going off, and you've through a series of processes, you're removing and then adding certain substances to turn it into leather, which is what you would recognize.
And then in the tannery, are you actually making the goods itself, or are you just sourcing and preparing the leather so that it can be made elsewhere?
Yes, so exactly that. So the tannery is where we produce the leather. And at the moment, anyway, the actual products are made in separate workshops in the UK as well. But it's not all done under one roof. The tannery is where the material itself is made.
Right, okay. And talk to me, I guess, a little bit about the products. I'm keen to know what makes Billy Tannery, special and different to other brands out there now.
Well, it kind of goes back to that same thing all around the leather. I think that it's rare for a leather goods brand to actually have such a focus on the leather. And I think everything that we're doing with our products is in order to celebrate that leather. And it's kind of the way that we tan, which is called vegetable tanning, is done with sort of natural bark extracts, and we're not adding lots of finishes and artificial coatings, so that the leather kind of looks uniform. So every piece of our leather is different. So what we've tried to do with our range of products is to sort of keep the leather center stage. So there aren't lots of bells and whistles. They're quite classic pieces. They're sort of intentionally minimal, so that the actual leather is the focus. That's the goal for us.
Yeah. And how is the leather sourced? I guess a lot of people will want to know about ethical practices, and how do you approach that? What is your philosophy when it comes to that?
Well, I mean, for us, the whole thing is about the traceability. That's what is missing in the leather industry generally, and that's one of the criticisms often, is this: we don't know where this has come from, we don't know what sort of farm it's come from, has it been involved in deforestation or bad animal husbandry or anything like that. And the we've sort of gone to the other extreme, where it's everything we know where each piece of leather has come from, because we source the goat skins and the deer skins that we tan predominantly. We source them from the meat companies and from the farms. So rather than just going to a sort of wholesale market and saying, okay, well, we're going to buy the source our hides and skins from there, I specifically go to particular farmers or meat companies that I know and I can talk to and I can trust, and we source from there. And that's kind of where it all starts. It's all about that traceability.
And has that gone back to how you were talking about earlier, growing up on farms and being in the community itself? You know, growing up, were you able to leverage that Rolodex of your childhood and bring that into the business?
I wouldn't say necessarily. I think that growing up on the farm, I have a different perspective to a lot of people when I'm thinking about leather. So I think that's meant that I've lent into that and can kind of distinguish between the sort of farms or meat producers that we want to source from versus the ones that necessarily might not have the same kind of ethos. And I think that's been really helpful. That I guess that's my kind of unique perspective that maybe other people in the leather industry might not have.
Yeah, we talk about it on the show quite a bit, how I feel like this show in particular really champions brands that have that authentic through line, where people can kind of see it from start to end and get the story without, you know, there's not any ambiguity where it's like, well, we're definitely British, we've definitely got London in our name, we've definitely got London on the patches, on in the packaging as well, on the clothes, and then you go through the fine print and find out that it's, you know, made in Bangladesh or something like that. This brand especially, I think, really harks back to beginning, middle and end. And I think that's probably me looking in what makes you guys very unique and what probably is your USP.
Well, that's I'm glad that it's that's what comes through, because I think that's what we really try and focus on. I think, yeah, the only other thing and one of the things we talk about quite a lot and we have to talk about quite carefully is the whole idea of the fact that the hides and skins that we use tend to be waste products. So before we got there, they were literally just being destroyed, because that's, as I said, there aren't enough tanneries left in the UK to take them, and the sort of the infrastructure has all been crumbling over the years. So sadly, what happens to a lot of hides and skins is they get destroyed at a cost to the meat producers. So we're sort of coming in to try and solve that waste problem, what by turning it into this material which has been around for thousands of years, which in some ways is strangely innovative to be doing this, which sounds strange sometimes when you're doing something that sounds so traditional.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. And you also mentioned earlier about your marketing and how that was something you went away from the farm and studied. How would you say that skill set has dovetailed into Billy Tannery and what you're doing now?
I mean, I think again, it's part of the perspective that I try and bring to this industry. I think particularly with around tanneries and leather, there is a really great story to tell about how it's made and uncover things that people wouldn't necessarily think about. And I think that is what, having a marketing background, you can kind of see what those stories are and hopefully pull out what's interesting and package it up in a way that is a bit more palatable to people than maybe a tannery might seem at first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people are on the team now?
So the full-time team is three of us. So it's me, and recently last year I've hired a fashion graduate who's called Martha, who's helping me on all across the business, but predominantly with sort of design and project management. And then I have an apprentice called Mark who started in the tannery with me again last year, and is learning the whole kind of tanning process from me so that I can focus on other areas of the business. But that's the sort of the core team. But as with many small businesses, we have a kind of a network of other kind of freelancers and other people that we work with to keep things going without having a huge team.
Yeah. And I'm just on the Instagram now, so that's why I might look semi-distracted as I was talking to you. Your Instagram, I should say, which is Billy Tannery. And the products look fantastic. Some of the bags, the satchels that I'm looking at here. Can you, and the wallets, the boots. Can you walk me through some of the products and also maybe just some of your favorites as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the focus from the start for us was on kind of like a small core range of products, and that's pretty much what we've still got to today. We kind of have added a few other bits that people have been asking for, but something like our roll top backpack is probably our signature product. It's kind of top of the range for us, but it's one of those products that just works. I will use one every day, and the design means that it can either be rolled up tight if you haven't got a huge amount with you, or then if you need to go for the weekend, it rolls up and you can fit lots more in it. So you've got a bag which is like an everyday bag, but also you could definitely take it as a weekend bag. Yeah. And that one has been sort of one of our real signatures from the start. And there's another one which is our like a large tote bag, which we sort of semi-jokingly called the goat early on.
Yeah, I was so just looking at that.
The goat bag, and that just stuck. So that's been one of our best sellers since we've launched. And yeah, you'll see they're not it's not about like really intricate designs. They're quite classic, sort of timeless, and that seems to be resonating with people, which is good.
And I'm curious about the boots. You've partnered with Grenson as well last year, by the looks of things. Are these still available?
Sadly, the Grenson boots aren't available at the moment. They were a short run collaboration that we did with Grenson, which was a fantastic project. I mean, that was a real sort of dream for me, was to work with one of the big Northampton shoemakers, and we've been talking to them for quite a long time, and yeah, it was great to get that project across the line. We essentially provided them with some leather for them to make a really short run batch of one of their boots, and then I think they sold out pretty much straight away, so those have all gone, sadly. But we do our own collaborations in footwear with a couple of other small makers in the UK on a sort of fairly regular basis. So that we've done sneakers with a company called Goral in Sheffield, and desert boots with a guy in Suffolk called has a company called Jad Shoes, which has been really popular for us. We'll be doing those again quite soon. But it essentially allows us to collaborate with other manufacturers in the UK to use our leather to make other stuff that we know people will like.
Oh, that's amazing. I really encourage people to go on the website as well, by the way, Billy Tannery, to have a look at the products to shop, but to go through the products themselves on Instagram. I'm just scrolling through. The sneakers look fantastic. Have you got anything in the pipeline regards to collaborations that you can talk about, or is it maybe something up the sleeve for now?
Well, there's nothing I can talk about in terms of any particular brands that we're going to be working with, but it's something I've been really keen to do for a long time. Is obviously another sort of big category in leather is outerwear and jackets. So something that's been bubbling along slowly in the background is a project to launch our first jacket. And it's been a lot harder than I thought it would be to design. And then we've been sampling with a couple of different manufacturers. And I'm hoping at some point this year that we'll have something to bring to people.
And with that, do you have to collaborate with pattern cutters or other manufacturers in order to produce the designs themselves? Have you got an idea in your mind of what the jacket can look like? What is the process?
So what normally happens is we'll start with kind of a inspiration and know roughly what we're looking for. Now that Martha's joined, she's a lot better than I am at actually getting that down onto paper and actually having training in actually being able to design properly and sketch and do specs and stuff. But obviously, when it comes to making products, you need people with real technical skills. So we tend to work with either specialist accessories designers, or in this case of the jacket, we're working with a bespoke tailor actually to sort of come up with the patterns and work on all that kind of stuff.
That's fascinating. Well, Jack, don't let me put words in your mouth. The way I see these projects working, in my mind at least, is it's something like a Formula One team where a car company will build something just for performance and go, well, we're going to throw everything at this just to see what the tech can do, just to see where the limits are. And then we'll dial it back and see if we can make some kind of line or a production of it. Is that a phase that you go through where you go, right, let's just get the best product out there. Let's make a few prototypes. Let's work with these guys. We'll do it at a loss, but at least we can know if it's possible or not.
Moving is right up there with death and divorce in the stress Olympics. But fear not. Turn that box of woes into a crate of woes with moving tips in the Life Beyond Boxes podcast with Premium Q Moving. Dive into the world of hassle-free moves, learn tips and tricks to save on cash and your sanity. Say goodbye to those moving meltdowns and hello to the smooth sailings. Or should we say smooth movings? Tune into Life Beyond Boxes with Premium Q Moving on lifebeyondboxes.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. And with us, unpack the secrets to a stress-free move.
It's a good way of looking at it. I mean, we, as a small company, are sadly not quite like a Formula One team where we can throw millions and millions of pounds at designing the best thing possible.
Signing blank checks. Just get him to make it. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. But it's a bit of both. Like, we want to be as creative as possible, try and push boundaries of what we can do with our leather. But because I kind of mentioned that for us, it's all about British manufacturing as well. So it's about finding the right manufacturing partners, individuals who make stuff in leather, at small workshops, and really trying to design around what it can be made really well in this country. Because I think there are so many things you can make from leather that it's easy to get a bit distracted and say, oh, we could do this, we could do this. And then when you get down to it, we don't really have that kind of manufacturing in the UK. And certain things, it's then really hard to try and get make. So yeah, to a certain extent, we are obviously trying to do stuff to really interesting new stuff. But if we can't find someone locally to make it, then we have to sort of park it and hope maybe it'll come back in the future.
Yeah. And I'm curious, do you have design influences yourself, and do you impart those into the brand? Like, do you look at films and iconic jackets or boots, or how does it work?
So I mean, I obviously being a small brand with me kind of the sort of driving force, a lot of it does come from kind of my inspiration. I mean, I've always been into into clothes and to fashion, and sort of quite sort of classic, I guess. Nothing too out there. So I think for me, it's always been about those sort of quality references. So like thinking of the UK, Grenson's a really good example. It's like they're a sort of an old brand on the surface, but are doing things in a kind of modern way, and how you can kind of do that without losing what is great about kind of traditional British stuff. And that's what I've tried to bring into Billy Tannery is that it's not ever going to be too sort of avant-garde or anything like that, but it's about trying to find classic stuff. When I think that's what resonates with our customers who tend to be guys. There's a quite a good split between men and women, but it tends to be guys who are buying the sort of bigger bags and stuff. And I think that the sort of audience that buys our products, they're not looking for something that's sort of completely out there in terms of design. It's largely about the leather and the story around it, and that's kind of come from my input and my desire, how I want to do things.
And can people see these products in the flesh, pardon the pun, or is it purely online?
It's a good point, and we've sort of tried various things in the past to make sure people can come and have a look at the products, but at the moment it's only online, but we offer like a really sort of easy to use returns policy. So like if people want to, it happens quite a lot, they want to have a look at a bag, then it's fine. If they want to try a different bag, then we end up sending them back and forth a little bit online, but it kind of works for us rather than having to have our own store, which we would like to do in the future. It's just about the right timings for stuff like that. It's a big undertaking to do that. And we're talking to a couple of sort of potential options where we might have just a little presence in another brand shop, just so that people do have that place to go and have a look, get the products in their hand, because that is quite important with leather, obviously.
Do you have bespoke clients as well that approach you for individual things?
Over the years, we have done bespoke a little bit. It can be a bit tricky to manage, just in terms of finding, like, quite often we're looking to make sort of larger batches of products, and to sort of throw in something completely bespoke can be tricky. It's not to say we don't do it. If the project is right, we will do it for individuals. Mm. A big part of our business actually these days is a bespoke kind of B2B offering. So we kind of use our same supply chain, our same leather and manufacturing to make products for predominantly hospitality businesses. So we do a lot of restaurants and bars, and we do sort of fit outs from menu covers and placemats and aprons and all that kind of stuff, and that's kind of gone from strength to strength, that side of the business. I love it. I mean, who doesn't like going to nice restaurants to check out the menus?
Fascinating. Yeah, that's brilliant. And yeah, I think it's these little touches that people love when they go out and have experiences. You know, I was just talking to a friend today because I was working in the new Arlington restaurant that's been opened up by Jeremy King, who owned the Woolsey, and we were putting all of the David Bailey photos on the wall, and we were looking at the plates, and the plates all go down at the time of the opening. So like there'll be a marker, and the marker will be set on the table for like 12, and then if it has the evening set menu, it'll be set around the dial of the plate. Anyway, all these little things that you just kind of subconsciously take in sometimes, but the tactile element of picking up a menu, I mean, that's where it all begins really, in the journey of having something to eat, is feeling that in your hand and knowing that you're in good hands, really. So dig it. Well, Jack, thank you so much for taking time. I had a whole load of other questions for you lined up about the process of becoming a leather tanner, you know, the different terminology of full grain, artificial coatings, etc. But I feel like I've covered some ground with you that was interesting to me, at least. I'm sure it's interesting to our listeners. So I want to thank you for your time. And people can go to billytannery.co.uk to find out more about you guys. And was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
Well, I mean, the only thing to mention and a sort of really exciting project that we've been working on recently that people will see kind of alluded to on our Instagram is a project with the Royal Estates that we've been working on recently, taking deer skins from both Balmoral and Windsor and turning them into products that are sold in each of the shops. And it's been a sort of a long-term project trying to work out how this was going to work between us and the Royal Estates. And it's sort of finally out there in the world. And there's a link in our Instagram to a piece that was in the Times where I got called a hipster tanner, which I thought was quite funny. But that's the only other project I would mention, because it's a sort of another side to what we do on the deer leather side, as well as goat, where we started.
Great. And you're in there as well in the tannery, and you know, you've got the work dungarees on, so you're very much hands on in the business that people can see, I guess. And are you behind the social absolutely. As well, as in, are you handling the social media if people DM? Are you in the background there?
Yeah, it's largely me. Yeah, it's either me or Martha who works with me. So it's a very small team at the moment, so people can definitely get that kind of personal service if they get in touch via email or DM on Instagram.
Once again, Billy Tannery, and the photos are fantastic. I mean, you must have worked hard to get all the images looking so good in terms of,
well, thank you. You
know, professional, I mean. But listen, Jack, thanks again.
And, not at all. It's been fun.
And I hope to speak to you soon.
Brilliant.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.